show. This is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, January 29th, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Education Decatur, From Counting to Confidence. Kindergartners find 100 ways to mark 100 days of school, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. By the 100th day of school, kindergartners have a long list of accomplishments to celebrate. Celebrating the 100th day is a kindergarten tradition, and we do it for a couple of reasons, both academic and social, said Johns Hill Magnet School kindergarten teacher Jessica Cameron. One of their major learning standards in kindergarten is counting to 100 by ones and tens. So we have done that today. We read 100 words. We drew 100 pictures. We stuck 100 stickers. We strung 100 Fruit Loops. Then we also had a built-in snack. The social aspect was encouraging the youngsters to feel proud of their accomplishments, she said. While January 26 was the actual 100th day of school, the harsh weather on Monday that necessitated an e-learning day delayed the celebration until Tuesday. For most of the kids, kindergarten is their first school experience, Cameron said, and kindergarten is important, so the teachers want to make sure they understand that they've accomplished a lot in just 100 days. Sometimes it kind of gets lost in the shuffle, but they are learning, she said. They're learning a lot, and they have grown and matured a lot from 100 days ago until now. The kids made posters at home with their families, which they carried during a parade through the school, cheered on by older students who lined the hallways to watch. Some students put 100 stickers on their posters. Others glued 100 popsicle sticks. One student made 100 paper hearts and glued Skittles to each one. If a child showed up at school without a poster, Cameron said, she and teaching assistant Maria Diaz helped them make one. Rosemary Gavin is in first grade this year, but she remembers the parade last year, and in honor of the 100th day, she made a Fruit Loops necklace to wear again this year. It's fun, she said of celebrating the 100th day, and she resisted the temptation to eat any of the Fruit Loops until the celebration was over. Daniel Myers, now in fifth grade, made a Spider-Man-themed poster for the 100th day when he was in kindergarten, and he said he began working on it well in advance. When I was walking down the hall with the poster, I was feeling good, he said. I was feeling all right. Seventh grader Irving Hernandez remembers his parade too and said he's a little sorry that he's too old to participate, other than cheering for the younger students. The reason we should celebrate 100 days at school is people have come very far at school and they've learned a lot, he said. I just feel like we should appreciate everyone who's worked hard throughout the year, and we should celebrate that. School enrollment. Expert eyes, bleak numbers. Falling birth rate, bad economics for renters stalk district, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur has the most negative outlook for the future of all the districts Preston Smith's company, Business Information Services, LLC, has studied nationally. The train is going down the hill and picking up speed, said Smith, hired by the district to provide up-to-date demographic information on Decatur and its schools. Enrollment has fallen steadily throughout the last two decades, Smith said, and will continue to fall. Jobs and housing are scarce, and the economy in the city is struggling. While the taxes levied by the school district are comparable to other areas, young families are not choosing to live in Decatur and send their children to school here, and that does not bode well for the district. I cannot tell you how bleak a demographic picture this is, Smith said, who compiled the numbers as the district prepares to kickstart its Roadmap 2030 process to create a strategic plan and building usage blueprint. The truth is, you have demographic trends that are totally stacked against enrollment growth. According to Smith's research, which he presented to the school board on Tuesday, The birth rate has declined 17.6% since 2020, and Decatur has lost 4,500 jobs since 2019. Housing is affordable compared to other areas, but available units have decreased by 700 in the last 5 years. The elderly population is growing, with houses that are paid for, so they don't have mortgages, and with their children grown, their connection to the district has faded. That population will be less open to referendums and tax increases for schools. Some 38% of households are one person. 54% of homes are valued at less than $100,000, with few new houses being built, while 40% of renters pay more than 30% of their income for rent, and 20% pay more than half of their income for rent. That causes instability, Smith said. Kids are changing houses, changing schools, and the renter population are tough to get a handle on. The economics for renters are really bad. The instability of their lives, he said, means that raising academic achievement is a serious challenge, and enrollment is likely to keep going down. Enrollment decreased by 10% between 1990 and 2000, and decreased another 20% between 2000 and 2010. Decatur schools could house an additional 2,625 students with the space it has now. And his projection is that within 10 years, the district will have space for 3,204 more students. While he didn't want to advise closing schools, he said, he would not advise building more unless two or three existing schools are closed. In the next few years, he said, based on trends, about 80% of homes will have no children in them at all. Private school enrollment has increased by 33% since 2010, and the surrounding districts are also competing for students who might otherwise be enrolled in Decatur schools. Elementary buildings are unbalanced, with some schools crowded and others underutilized. Hope Academy, for example, has 656 students in a building that could house 977, while Dennis School, temporarily housed in the former Garfield School with rented modular units to take the overflow, has 651 students in a building designed for 477. He suggested that building boundaries need to be redrawn for more balanced populations, and that the school district work with the city to come up with a plan to turn the tide away from shrinking population and attract more young families with children, even if that means offering cash incentives to entice those families to move into the district. You have to adapt to the demographic pattern, he said. The pattern is embedded, and it's going to take a lot to reverse these trends. Board President Will Wetzel thanked Smith for his bluntness. I've been saying a lot of this, but nobody wants to listen, Wetzel said. Secondly, when we look at strategic planning, the focus should be on fixing our own house before we bring anybody else in. Smith said his advice is, as the board searches for a new superintendent to replace Rochelle Clark, who will return in June, that the chosen candidate should be someone who is not afraid to shake things up and make significant changes. The board is doing first-round interviews now and hopes to have a superintendent hired sometime in February. I think this will be invaluable as we move forward to put together our strategic initiative, said Board President Bill Clevenger. The district has announced the Roadmap 2030 Committee will have its first meeting January 28th, with meetings scheduled through the end of May, to come up with a plan that, as of now, should be implemented in the 2027-28 school year. Mount Zion, Taking Time to Celebrate Nonprofits, by Danette Beckett, Mount Zion. Catherine Stanford was ready to talk to anyone who was interested in learning more about Alzheimer's. What we're doing is trying to do is raise awareness about Alzheimer's, she said, because it's not a normal part of aging. It's actually a brain disease. We don't yet really know its full cost. The Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association was one of 10 nonprofit organizations recognized during the Mount Zion Chamber of Commerce 2026 Nonprofit Appreciation Banquet, held at the Mount Zion Convention Center. The event was important to the organizations, according to Stanford. For those who approached the Alzheimer's Association's table, the volunteer community health worker offered information on how to prevent cognitive decline, such as health monitoring, cognitive and physical exercises, and nutrition. Everything that's good for the heart is good for the brain, Stanford said. Board President Kyle Karsten and the rest of the chamber board wanted to take the time to recognize the nonprofit organizations in the community, just to say thank you and recognize what they do, he said. During the event, each nonprofit represented received a plaque recognizing their work. One organization's name was drawn to receive 10% of the evening's proceeds. We wish we could give 10% to all of the nonprofits, Karsten said. The winner was the Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. The organization also won $1,000 from the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation. Stanford accepted the awards. Each agency hosted a display providing information about their organization. According to Jennifer Don, Paw Print Ministries Executive Director, the event is important for them as well. It helps to raise awareness for our mission and what we're doing in the community, she said. Our outreach would not happen without community support. Paw Print Ministries has 45 comfort dogs ready to serve the community. The dogs and their handlers visit nursing facilities, cancer care centers, schools, and libraries, as well as tragedies and disasters. It is amazing to witness the impact a dog has when they walk in the room, Don said. They can certainly change the tone and uplift spirits. The agency offers more than just the comfort of a dog, according to Don. It's really the dedicated volunteers who show up to train their dogs so they can go out and serve in our community and make a difference, she said. It takes 1 to 2 years for a volunteer to get through our training program. It's intense. Natalie Beck, CEO of the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, was the keynote speaker for the event. She offered a game with the audience, answering a series of questions. The last person standing won $4,000 for their organization. The winner was Macon Resources, Inc. According to Beck, the foundation works closely with the local nonprofit agencies, connecting them with donors and financing to further their missions. Beck encouraged the community to help their favorite nonprofit agencies with other means of support. They need to help them with volunteer hours, she said. That's the easiest way. Just be an advocate. Courts. Homeless man accused of library arson by Tony Reed, Decatur. A homeless man is accused of attempting, twice, to torch the Decatur Public Library. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department says Jonathan E. McDonald, 40, launched the arson attacks after previously being banned from the building after numerous interactions with city librarian Rick Meyer. Detective James Kiernan said McDonald is accused of striking first just after 2 a.m. on November 1st, when he lit items on fire against doors on the side of the building where the children's section of the library is located. The responding police officer said there was slight singeing to the edge of the carpet just inside the door, Kiernan said, noting repairs were estimated at costing $375. Meyer is quoted as showing police surveillance video which captured the arson fire being set. Rick advised he knows Jonathan on site from numerous interactions at the Decatur Public Library over 2025, Kiernan said, and that he had been banned from the library prior to the fire being set. McDonald is then accused of striking again on December 13th, this time showing up at 4:15 p.m. and setting items on fire against a wall on the northeast side of the library. The fire charred and discolored the brick exterior of the building, said Niram. The building maintenance supervisor provided a bill of $725 to repair the damage to the brick wall. Once again, the arson attack was recorded by the library's surveillance camera system. Niram said the footage shows McDonald setting the fire and then walking away from the fire immediately after lighting it. Macon County Jail records list McDonald as being held in custody since December 20th, after he had been arrested on 5 counts of criminal trespass and 2 charges of criminal damage, although it's not clear if those offenses involve the library as well. 2 affidavits signed by Niram said McDonald was rearrested at the jail January 15th and booked on 2 charges of arson and 2 more counts of criminal trespass involving his attacks on the library. The defendant was arraigned January 20th in Macon County Circuit Court and denied pretrial release on the grounds he poses too great a threat to public safety. He is due back in court February 4th for a preliminary hearing when he will enter pleas to the charges against him. Healthcare. Growers Endure Costly Insurance by Sarah Bowden and Drew Hawkins, KFF Health News. Last year was a tough one for farmers. Amid falling prices for commodity crops, such as corn and soybeans, rising input costs for supplies like fertilizer and seeds, as well as the Trump tariffs, and the dismantling of USAID, many farms weren't profitable. And now, the enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies that many Americans, including farmers, relied on to buy health insurance are gone, having expired at the end of December. James Davis, 55, who grows cotton, soybeans, and corn in northern Louisiana, said he didn't know how he and his wife would afford coverage. Their share of their insurance premium quadrupled for 2026 to about $2,700 a month. You can't afford it, Davis said. Bottom line, there's nothing to discuss. You can't afford it without the subsidies. More than a quarter of the agricultural workforce purchases health insurance through the individual marketplace, according to an analysis from KFF, a health information nonprofit that includes KFF Health News. The 27% rate is much higher than the overall populations. Only 6% of U.S. adults have non-group coverage. Farmers are used to facing challenges such as unpredictable weather and fluctuating commodity prices. But the loss of the health care subsidies, coupled with challenging economic conditions, will make coverage unaffordable for many. Without major intervention from Washington, farmers say they'll have to choose between being uninsured or leaving the farm work behind for a job that offers health insurance. Farming is dangerous work. Agricultural workers spend much of their time outside and exposed to the elements. Many of their duties can lead to injury or illness. They drive and operate heavy machinery, work with toxic chemicals, and handle large animals. The rate of work-related deaths for farmers is 7 times the national average. The financial toll of non-fatal farm injuries is also significant. A study from the University of Nebraska Medical Center found that the average cost of a farming injury was $10,878 in medical care and $4,735 in lost work. It's essential that farmers can buy comprehensive insurance, said Florence Beckett, a rural sociology and associate professor of agricultural health and safety at Pennsylvania State University, where she studies the social and economic needs of farm households. In a 2022 study, Beckett found that more than 20% of the U.S. farm households had medical debt exceeding $1,000, and that more than half were not confident they could cover the costs of a major illness or injury. That shows you the level of vulnerability and concerns that farmers are facing, she said. Mental health is also a concern. Farmers are roughly twice as likely to die by suicide compared with the general population. Mental health hotlines that serve rural communities have seen an uptick in calls. These concerns around farmers' increased emotional distress, coupled with a rise in bankruptcies, conjures memories of the farm crisis of the 1980s, said Michael Klein, a vice president at the industry group USA Rice. During that decade, there was a raft of foreclosures, and hundreds of farmers took their own lives. We're really afraid of what's going to happen. Farmers can be reluctant to acknowledge that they rely on government-subsidized insurance, said Megan Palmer, 43, who runs a dairy farm in northeastern Iowa with her husband, John, 45. We're not handout takers, Palmer said. More than 40% of dairy farmers lack health insurance, one of the highest rates among all agricultural sectors. But going uninsured is not an option for the Palmers. During their first year of marriage, the couple recalled, they were uninsured and had to pay out of pocket for two unexpected health crises. Palmer had an appendectomy, and her husband needed stitches after getting kicked in the face by a cow. It was stupid of us, Palmer said, of the decision to forego coverage. But this year, the combined out-of-pocket monthly cost of their plans is increasing by more than 90% to $368.18. Their total 2026 deductible is $7,200. Palmer is a registered nurse who picks up shifts on an as-needed basis, allowing her the flexibility to prioritize her work on the farm. She's now searching for a job with health benefits. But she worries a job that doesn't allow her to keep up with the farm work will create a greater burden for her husband. John is working exhausted most of the time, she said. That's when mistakes get made and you end up in the ER. Even after the enhanced subsidies expired at the end of 2025, the Palmers estimate their income will still be low enough that they'll qualify for some tax credits to purchase coverage. However, under the GOP's tax and spending law, repayment limits are being eliminated. So, if the Palmers have a surprisingly profitable 2026, they'll be forced to pay some or even all of that subsidy back at tax time. A farmer's income can vary drastically from year to year, Beckett said, partly because commodity prices can fluctuate rapidly. Some farmers might deliberately choose not to expand their businesses because too much profit might mean they lose access to health care subsidies. Farmers who are insured through Medicaid have similar concerns, Beckett said, but prioritizing health care affordability by suppressing operational growth can have long-term consequences for a farmer's success. Palmer in Iowa and Davis in Louisiana are both upset that lawmakers aren't more sensitive to the economic demands of farming and how those have coincided with rising health costs. Doomsday clock ticks closer to midnight. Associated Press. Earth is closer than it's ever been to destruction as Russia, China, and the U.S. and other countries become increasingly aggressive, adversarial, and nationalistic, a science-oriented advocacy group said Tuesday and advanced its doomsday clock to 85 seconds till midnight. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist members had an initial demonstration Friday and then announced their results Tuesday. The scientists cited risks of nuclear war, climate change, potential misuse of biotechnology, and the increasing use of artificial intelligence without adequate controls as it made the annual announcement, which rates how close humanity is from ending. Last year, the clock advanced to 89 seconds to midnight. Since then, hard-won global understandings are collapsing, accelerating a winner-takes-all great power competition and undermining the international cooperation needed to reduce existential threats, the group said. They worry about the threat of escalating conflicts involving nuclear-armed countries, citing the Russia-Ukraine war, May's conflict between India and Pakistan, and whether Iran is capable of developing nuclear weapons after U.S. and Israeli strikes last summer. International trust and cooperation is essential because if the world splinters into an us versus them, zero-sum approach, it increases the likelihood that we all lose, said Daniel Holes, chair of the group's Science and Security Board. The group also highlighted droughts, heat waves, and floods linked to global warming, as well as nations' failure to adopt meaningful agreements to fight global warming, singling out U.S. President Donald Trump's efforts to boost fossil fuels and hobble renewable energy production. Starting in 1947, the advocacy group used a clock to symbolize the potential and even likelihood of people doing something to end humanity. At the end of the Cold War, it was as close as 17 minutes to midnight. In the past few years, to address rapid global changes, the group changed from counting down the minutes until midnight to counting down the seconds. The group said the clock could be turned back if leaders and nations work together to address existential risks. Deal made in asbestos case by Scott Perry, Chicago. A settlement has been reached in connection with the alleged improper handling and removing of materials containing asbestos during the renovation of the Kroger in Taylorville. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office filed the lawsuit in August 2022 against Kroger and contractor SSI Services, alleging that the companies left chip floor tiles that contained asbestos in areas accessible to the public while the store was open, creating a substantial danger to public health. The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency said it received a complaint the previous month expressing concerns about renovations happening at the grocery store. An inspection led the EPA to issue a seal order on the property. The seal order was lifted in December 2022. This settlement holds Kroger and SSI Services accountable for jeopardizing the public's health by exposing shoppers and employees to dangerous materials containing asbestos, Raoul said. I'm pleased that this case is resolved and that the abatement has been completed. The settlement requires that Kroger and SSI Services refrain from future violations and pay $108,000 in civil penalties. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, January 29th, 2026. Please stay tuned.